listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolensky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax. Scott just tried to start the show there. I start the tasties. Scott starts the hasties. This is a show. We're going to do another fundamentals episode. And I can't believe this is not one that we thought about. Scott just messaged me. He's like, hey, we've never really done like a Git episode on what are the fundamentals, really just doing an explainer episode. So that's what we got for you today. We are sponsored by two awesome companies. First one is Sentry, which is going to do all of your error and exception tracking, and FreshBooks, which is cloud accounting. My name is Wes Boss. I'm a developer from The Hammer, and Scott is with me. How are you doing today, Scott?
Hey, I am doing good. I was trying to think of a cool nickname for Scott from Mile High. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what they call Denver, because it's a mile high in elevation. Yeah, our football stadium was the Mile High for a long time, and now it's something else. But yes, I am here, and I'm with Wes and the Hammer, ready to talk about Git, because if there's something that any beginner web developer knows, is there's nothing more likely to make you want to run and grab your hammer from the garage and smash your computer than some good old-fashioned confusion within Git. Because this is a topic that trips up a lot of people, especially when they've never used any kind of version control in the past. So I'm really excited to talk about Git fundamentals. And I'm also excited to chat with you about it, Wes, because I don't know, we don't talk about Git stuff that much, even when we're just chit-chatting. So,
Git chatting.
Yeah, this will be some Git chatting. I'm excited to just get a little bit of Wes Boss Git action, whatever you're doing here, and you know, do the same.
So I just Googled the highest cities in North America, and Denver is the second highest city in North America.
In elevation.
In more than one way, actually.
But well, yes, in many ways.
Yeah. That's unreal. So does water take longer to boil up there?
Absolutely. In fact, my mother-in-law, whenever she comes here, she's always like having to adjust all of her recipes. Things bake at different lengths.
Wow.
There's all sorts of stuff. In fact, when you get here, one of the first things that happens to some people is they get really bad headaches because they're getting tired really quickly. For the first like month we lived here, you would have a beer and you would be like, you'd be drunk just because you get drunk faster. There's all sorts of like weird little things.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's why actually the Olympic Training Center is here and everything. The athletes train at elevation so that you can perform better at normal elevations. The babies are even born with a different amount of like the blood count is different within the babies. There's like a whole thing about that.
Wow. All right. So you probably have used Git if you're listening to this, but we're going to start from the fundamentals. So bear with us. Git is a version control system. And what that means is that you set up what's called the Git repository. And as you write your code in a Git repository, you're able to track changes for, like, let's say you're working on a new feature. You write the code for that feature. And then generally when maybe we can talk about this a little bit later, is like, when do you commit something? But generally, like when you're done that feature, you'll go ahead and commit that feature. And then if something breaks or you need to go back to and reference what you had in the past, you don't have to make another folder of that. You're able to roll it back. You're able to view previous commits. It's sort of like little snapshots in time. And that's very important because of accidentally deleting code or whatnot. But also, just like code bases do get fairly large. And if you were just to copy paste the entire folder every single time, it would be way too large. And there is no way for you to track who, what, and when changed at a certain point in time.
Yeah. The who, what, when, what has changed, that is really the core concepts here, is that this is a thing that allows you to, in an organized fashion, keep versions of your code. And that's pretty much it, right? It is here to allow you to have various versions and different pathways for your code to exist in the world. And this is important for two major reasons: for working by yourself, the history of your code, having your code stay organized in a way that if you goof up, you can go back to, right? Maybe perhaps you installed a version of a package that is no longer compatible with your system and you want to go back Well, this is an easy way to go exactly back to where you were before, right? It's like a save state in a video game. You can just start over, right? Another cool thing about it is the ease of which it makes working within teams, because a lot of times when we're working in teams, we all know the workflows that can happen with if some people are in the same file and you're saving over a file. I mean, I know that when we were doing occasional cowboy coding where you're editing files live on FTP, you know, like 20 years ago, there would be a situation where somebody would save a file and somebody else had a different local copy of that file. They saved it. They both upload it. One of them is good. One of them is not good. And you just blew away all of the work that somebody else just did. I remember that happening. And what this allows you to do more than just that, though, it allows you to understand exactly how the code was written and by who and when and where and what. And there's all sorts of extensions and whatever in your code editor. In fact, I can hover over any line in my code and it's going to tell me who wrote that line, when they wrote it. So for me, that is like a very, very crucial skill. And anytime you have teams of people, even like two or more people working on code, these features really start to be important. So it's funny because those things are all important for individuals. But I think Git enters like a whole nother realm the moment you start working in teams, because there's so many cool different flows and ways that people can commit code and share code and add code to your repo, open source or closed source wise. I thought we would maybe breeze through this UI versus command line thing, maybe talk about why Git can be a little bit scary here, and then we'll come back to the Git UI thing a little bit later in the episode. So we wanted to first and foremost say, well, I guess for first and foremost, do you use a Git client?
I don't. The closest thing that I come to using a Git client, and I have used a couple in the past, but I've always come back to just using the command line. But the closest thing I use to a GUI is when I have merges that need to happen, I will jump into VS Code and use their GUI for that. Although I have used better, I've had better experiences in other applications. We'll talk about that. Mm-hmm. But I'm primarily, I would say, 98% in the command line.
Yeah, I would say I am just about the exact same. VS Code specifically is really the only GUI that I use for Git. And I do have a handful of extensions installed, whether it's Git Lens to see, you know, who committed what, or there's some Git history ones where you can get that neat little subway graph looking type thing of your code. So you can see where exactly, you know, branches happened and things like that. So I do have a lot of extensions there. But when it comes to committing, staging and all those things, which we'll define later in this episode, I'm pretty much doing it all through the command line. The version control tab in VS Code is very good, though, if you ever are interested in using it. There are some things they can't do, but I do occasionally come to the what's changed panel in VS Yes. Code to sort of see which files have been recently changed, or hey, I just did this thing and I didn't intend for it to hit this file, but ooh, there it is. It's in the files that's been changed. Writing Git commit messages. Sometimes I do use this because it's easy, but I almost always just default back to the terminal because of straight up muscle memory.
Yeah, I was thinking the other day, probably about like a week ago, like I would love, somebody asked me like, hey, can you do a Git course? And I was like, like what would I do in a Git course? Because like,
I thought about that too.
Almost all of my Git stuff is like the stuff we're going to talk about today. And then when it comes to complicated rebases and squashes and rolling back things, I usually have to do a little bit of Googling here or there to find out what I'm actually doing.
Yeah, there's a lot of like complex Git that scares me still, just because I don't need it yet. I haven't found the times where I'm like really needing it. Cool. So let's get into Git 101. Actually, before we even get to this is Git 001. I don't think that's a thing, but I'm talking about like installing Git. Do you have to install Git? What do you do to get Git up and running? How do you Git running?
Man, that's a good question.
Because it feels like a whole other lifetime ago that I last dealt with this.
I've probably installed Git like twice over my entire last 10 years. And that's because it's when you get a new laptop, you have to install it. Does it come with Xcode? I don't even know, on a Mac.
See, that's a great question. You need Xcode. If you're on a Mac, you need the Xcode command line tools, but I don't believe it does come with Git. I believe you do need to install it from git-scm.com. I'll have the link in the show notes. It's like a click installer. It's if you're on Mac or Windows.
I remember this.
It's just been so long.
And then the first time you use it, it says, oh, I need Xcode developer tools. And you have to download a 90 gig file from Apple in order to make it work.
It takes an entire day. So just like if you're like sitting down to play a video game, make sure you turn the console on early so that I can install the latest updates. Just like that.
I believe it probably does come with most Linux distros, just because that is something that you do in Linux, is you live in the command line to get it. And Windows definitely doesn't come with it. But again, it's just a click-through installer. I believe that process is pretty simple on Windows as well.
Yeah, yeah. So the first thing we need to do if we are going to be starting a repo, or as Wes mentioned, it's a repository, right? You'll often hear them referred to as repos just because it's easier to say. So to initialize a repo, let's say you have a folder full of your code and you want this code to be tracked by this version control system, you would have to be in that directory and you would type in your command line, once gets installed, git space init for git initialize. Do you know what git init actually does, Wes?
In the folder that you're working in, generally it's the root of your actual project. When you type that, it will create a hidden folder that's called .git. And usually you don't see that folder because most editors, as well as most by default, your Finder and Windows Explorer will hide hidden folders from you. And if you enable your, I recommend turning it on if you're a new developer so you can see them, but it'll still make it sort of grayed out so you know that it's a hidden folder. And inside of that .git folder, it contains information about your repository. So that tracks things like where are you currently in your thing. So like, have you made any commits? Have you made any changes? Have there been new files added since you've done a last commit? It also keeps all of the changes that you've done in a very small fashion. So it tracks all of the changes that went through. And then it also tracks origins, which is, we'll talk about that. But generally, if you want to push your Git repo to somebody else, you want to get it from your computer to another computer, most likely that's like GitHub, then it will keep track of different spots where you can put that. And those are called origins.
Yeah, cool. So we have our folder. And if your code is not living anywhere else, as in you haven't pushed it to a remote location like GitHub or Bitbucket or whatever, if you delete that .git folder, there goes your whole history. That thing, that's all, if you're only keeping it in one location, whatever, all of the information your entire application needs to have that version controls in that .git folder. So if you don't have it remotely saved anywhere, that history is going to be all gone the moment you delete that, which might be helpful if you're trying to declare bankruptcy in Git. Maybe you've like goofed it up enough where you're just like, you know what, screw it, starting over. Because that's certainly a thing. I feel like that can happen at the beginning.
Lots of times, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Especially when you're learning. I think people often forget, just if you've never worked in a version control system, how different or weird it can feel at first when you're first learning, especially if you've worked in different ways prior to that. If you're coming brand new to programming, maybe Git's just embedded as something you've done because of your bootcamp taught you or something. But for a lot of us, we had done many other means of working in files or even version control before this. So now we have the next major command, which you're going to need to know is add. So we would like to say git add. Now git add has a whole bunch of options. And the funniest thing about git add's options is I feel like everybody kind of tells you to use different ones in different tutorials, which is funny. People just be like, all right, we're going to do git add space then dot. And then somebody's also, we're going to git add space hyphen A. Now, what do you do specifically, Wes, with your git add? And then maybe you can talk about what does git add do?
So what I'll do is, if I want to add absolutely everything that is in the current folder, I do git add space A, and that will add absolutely everything. When I've made changes after a commit, we'll talk about what that is in a second, I use git add dash P. Have you ever used dash P?
I have not used
dash P. Oh boy, it's the best. So that, I don't know what the P stands for. Progressive, maybe? Partial?
Porcupine.
It basically, what it does is it takes every single change that you've done since you last did a commit, and it will allow you to yes, no each of those changes. So it shows you the diff right in your command line, and you put your fingers on the Y and the N keys, and you just go through every single change that you've done.
Cool.
And it will just show you, because sometimes, like I've done this many times, is you just blindly add everything that has changed. And then maybe you accidentally made a change or put a console log in somewhere that you shouldn't have. And this allows you to have a quick little review of all of the changes you've made before you go and send that off to a team member or something like that.
Cool.
So by default, when you do a git init, none of your files are being tracked. And if you want to track changes to those files, you have to first add them to the repo. And then you also, when they've changed, you have to add them as well. A really important part to remember before you do your first git add is make sure you create a .gitignore file. And in that file, you list all of the folders and files that you do not wish to be part of your Git repo, because you don't want everything to be part of your Git repo. Like, what are some ideas, some things that shouldn't be part of repo? Like passwords, environmental variables,
files.
DS store is one that always pops up on a Mac for some reason. Large files like videos. Sometimes even if you've got lots of images, that's not necessarily a good spot for putting them in a Git repo, because it gets really, really big. So generally you want to ignore all of those things, and they will still live on your computer, but they will not be part of your Git repo, and they will not be pushed to other people who use that Git repo. And then also, if you lose those files, you're kind of out of luck as well, because they're not backed up in any way.
Yeah. Cool. So I actually pretty much always do git add and then period, which to my understanding just adds everything that has been changed. It's just like a blanket add. Yeah.
The difference between dash capital A and dash period is that if you are in a subfolder, add dash A will add everything that is tracked by the repo, and the period will add everything that is in that current folder. So that might is usually not a difference, but it might be something that you want. You, but yeah, I only want to add the changes to this controllers folder, not the package JSON or whatever I did to upgrade that.
Yeah. Well, here's a good little tip. What I would do if I were you is probably do what Wes is doing with the hyphen A flag, the git add hyphen A, and then just alias that in your bash to like git add or just add or something, so that you never have to think about it again. Because it's not one of those things there are features in here, like such as the patch prompt that Wes is saying, but like I don't ever, day to day, I don't need to look. If I needed these, I would look them up. So I most always alias my git add to something else. So like Wes mentioned, anytime you add a file to your project or anytime a file has been changed, you need to add it as like saying, hey, these changes have happened. Once those changes have happened, you need to commit those changes. Now, the commit is where you're basically solidifying those changes as something that has happened, where the add, it's not putting it, it's not writing it into history yet. It's just sort of saying, all right, these files have been added. But to write to history, to the grand docs, to the Library of Alexandria, you have to.
That's a great way to put it.
Yes, you have to git commit. You do that by typing git commit. And if you just type git commit, Git is going to yell at you, because all commits need what is called a commit message. Now, a commit message is a simple sentence that defines what has happened in this commit. This way, when you're reading over your past commits, you don't see a list of, okay, 10 files changed, whatever. You see those nice, simple sentences. Now, the upside to this is that you can write really nice commit messages, and commit messages can even be used to generate change logs and things like that. Or you could just write git commit messages that are helpful, such as adds new protections to this feature, blah, blah, blah. And it doesn't have to be a in-depth whatever, but it should be descriptive about what the code contains. So that way, when you're looking at back on it later, you can say, all right, this is the one I want to go to. This is the specific commit I want to go to. So you do that with git commit hyphen M, and then you have the string or the text of your commit message.
Yeah, and generally those commit messages will be something like add support for IE6 or fixes. Often what will happen is you have like a bug tracker, whether that's GitHub or like a Jira or something like that. And sometimes in that commit message, you'll put a reference to an issue number. And that way, If you want more information about what this thing was adding or fixing or removing, you can always look that up and reference it in your project management software.
Yeah. Yeah, there is like do's and don'ts with commit messages. And sometimes you'll see people that'll post a commit message just like, fix it bug.
Okay, that's well, most of my commit messages.
No, I hate that. I hate that.
Mash the keyboard. Yeah, no, for like important stuff, I will. But sometimes it's just like I'm building a course and I just need to make sure that what is up and I'll just mash the keyboard or whatever. I know that's not the best, but like when it's professional stuff, I will do a good message. I should add this. Sometimes I'll be working and maybe I'll upgrade my npm package.json and then I'll also fix something on the homepage and then I'll also change a price. Mm. Right there, I kind of just did three different things that are totally unrelated. So if that's the case, what you can do is you can git add package.json, package lock, and then git commit updated dependencies. Okay, those two are done. Mm. And then git add index.html. Git commit, change the homepage, and then git add prices.js, git commit, change the prices. And that way, if you're ever looking back at like what happened, you know, like it's not just like I did these three things and I bunched them all up into one. You're able to pick them. And in that case, you don't git add dash A, you just git add the files that have changed.
Yeah. Word. Next, so we've created the repository. We've added things to the repository. We've written them into stone with commit. Now we're ready to go put those up somewhere else, because if code is living just on your computer, then it is basically at any given point subject to the ticking time bomb that, you know, hardware tech is. If you bump your computer or your daughter spills something on it or whatever, your son decides to, I don't know, pick it up and slam it down, you are then lost. And you know, all that work you just did was lost. So what we then have next is going to be pushing the code. Now, you can push a code to any remote location. It has to be specified as an origin. So what we first want to do is to git remote add origin and then paste in the long string that either GitHub or any of these other clients may give you, these on the web cloud hosting services, right? The GitHub is really just a service to host your code on the cloud. That's all it is, just like some of its competitors. So we do git remote add origin, then the long string, and that sets the origin of our code to be living elsewhere out in GitLand. And then we do git push origin, and then the branch name, whether it's git push origin main to push the main branch, then it all goes up to your origin and it will live there, where you can then have other people pull it down, or you can pull it down from another computer or whatever. It is then basically out there living on the cloud.
The origins are just other git repos somewhere else. So the whole idea with git repos is that they're decentralized, meaning that of course you have your repo on your computer, but that's not the main repo out there. That's not the end all repo. You could have another repo on another computer. And if those are origins and if they have the same git history, you're able to push code from your repo to another. And generally you're not pushing you theoretically could push code from your laptop to your coworker's laptop. But generally that doesn't happen because these things are not network accessible. Like there's firewalls and stuff in the way, but things like GitHub are network accessible. So you can push it up. So there's people that like always get like bent out of shape when we talk about this whole like commit and then push to GitHub, because that's where it lives. But that is pretty much how most of us use it at the end of the day. So it's no problem thinking about it in that regard.
Yeah, totally.
Let's talk about the next one, which is pulling. You wrote your code, you pushed it up to GitHub, and then you have a coworker, or maybe you went home and your laptop is not the same as your work laptop, but you want to work on the same project because you are overworked and you have to do evening work as well. So what do you do in that case? Well, now you got to think about, okay, like where's the most recent version of my code? Well, hopefully you remember to push to GitHub, but at the end of the day, and then you can go on your laptop. And if you have the same repo on your computer, If you don't, you can just clone it. We'll talk about that in a second, but you just git pull. And then you specify where you'd like to pull it from, and it will bring down all of the changes. And that's key, because it's not like downloading the entire repo again. And that can get very, very large, especially if you've got like your Git repo has a list of every single change that has ever happened. So if you've got 6 years worth of it, and if some guy in marketing accidentally Git committed a 500 meg video at one point in time, that's going to be in your Git repo and it's going to be in your Git history. But by Git pulling, it will only pull down the very small actual changes that happened to your computer.
Word. Let's say you pulled some code in, you fire up that project, and all of a sudden things start breaking in production.
This is
perhaps
good.
Perhaps you want to be able to pinpoint the exact commit. Hey, there's that word commit. Perhaps you want to pinpoint that exact commit where things went so wrong. And so you could do that with one of our sponsors today, which is Sentry. Now, Sentry at sentry.io is the perfect place to keep track of all your errors and exceptions. And all of those errors and exceptions, it is very one of these cool services that I've been personally using for a long time and couldn't get along without. Basically, what this thing allows you to do is see every error that your user's hitting on your site. It allows you to categorize them, see how many times in the past given amount of time span this thing has even happened, right? Has this thing happened once in the past, 100 days? Maybe it's not something you need to worry about as much. Maybe it was just somebody's extension going wrong. Either way, we have the ability to see, categorize, track, log all of our errors and exceptions and see how they're doing. And it's even connected to GitHub or any of your favorite version control managers. So I can create an issue in GitHub from Sentry. Then somebody else can come in and fix it, push that code up to GitHub, fix it. We can mark it as change and say, hey, it was fixed in this particular commit. That way, when it breaks again, we know who to blame. So head on to Sentry at .io. Use the coupon code TASTYTREAT, all lowercase, all one word, and you will get 2 months for free. Highly recommend. So let's say you had, and by the way, this is no longer the ad transition. So let's say that you no longer, or let's say you wanted to work on some code that already exists in GitHub, and you were wondering, or GitLab or any of these, you're wondering, and you say, I want to like play around with this, or I want to try it out, or I have some improvements to help them out with it. What do I do? Well, this is where the next one comes in, which is clone. Now, people who are new to GitHub may head to a specific repositories page. They may see the download button and say, ooh, download. Let me click download. They click the download button and presents them with a modal that shows clone with HTTPS along with open in GitHub and then download zip. You're like, okay, well, I'll do the download zip. But before you do that, this is the better way, which is to clone the repo. And we can clone the repo using this string, which is basically the URL to the repo. And you run git clone. You copy and paste the string and you paste it in there, which is the address to the repo. And what does it do? It fetches the entire history as well as the entire repo. So that way you can make modifications to it, add them, commit them, and push them back up. And then we get to do some of the cool, fun stuff that we're going to be talking about next.
So next we have branches. Branches are key for working on features. Or if you want to, like right now I'm working on my Master Gatsby website. And I'm at the same time, I'm also upgrading a couple of the backend components. I'm doing a little bit to the bundlers, and the whole site is sort of in development right now. However, I need to keep like a working copy of the website, because sometimes what happens is I'm in the middle of building a feature and then I have to jump back to the main website and fix something really quickly. So if I was right now, the current branch that you get by default in Git is called master, but they are talking about changing it to main.
I think they already did.
Did they? I haven't seen that yet.
Well, then maybe they haven't, but mine are all, well, at least my current repos are a main.
Oh, cool. Yeah. It was just, there's a github.com/github/renaming just showing some stuff about some tips on how to actually change to your main repo instead of master repo. Okay, cool. So if I have everything in my main branch and I want to work on this feature, I will switch branches, and that will allow me to edit all of the files and whatnot. And by switching to a new branch, it doesn't take a copy, but it gives you your entire website. You can make changes to it. You can add, you can commit, you can even push to your branch on GitHub. However, if you need to go back to what the website was at any time and work on that, you can, it's called checking out. So you can check out to your master branch again, and then you do a quick fix, and then you can jump back to the feature that you're working on. You can check out that branch, and you can go back and forth. And then the whole idea is that at a certain point, that feature will be done, and you will merge, which we haven't talked about yet, but you'll take those changes and sort of feather them in on top of your main branch that you have. Does that make sense?
I think so. Yeah, to me, that definitely makes a lot of sense. So the way you can think about it is, like, they often illustrate this in train tracks or whatever. Maybe you're going in one specific direction. You want to branch out. You go slightly different direction, right? So you're now on a whole other train track. And then you can bring that other previous train track or any sort of changes that's happened to your code. You can bring that into the current one, or you can bring the current one into the other one. There's some fancier stuff with rebase or whatever, but I think for Git fundamentals, we should stay away from rebase. So this is really the standard flow that you'll see a lot of people working with is merging of code and checking out branches. Okay. Actually, I aliased my checkout to be branch, and I aliased git checkout hyphen b to be new branch, and I never used them. I made these aliases thinking they'd be like, oh yeah, this makes so much more sense. Unfortunately, I just never remember. So I always just do git checkout b whatever. So we have the ability to check out, create new branches. We have the ability to then merge code with git merge. Now, sometimes you end up having what are called merge conflicts. That's when the two lines of code, or perhaps many more than that, they're butting heads in terms of maybe these two things were changed at a similar time and they're not compatible. And whatever it is that the code, the computer cannot understand the correct way to merge this code together and have it work or make sense, right? It just doesn't understand which thing is the most recent version in terms of, like, correct everything. It's not a perfect system, so it's not always going to magically understand exactly what you want to merge. And you will have these things where you have to go essentially line by line to determine, or group by group, which code you would like to use. And sometimes you want to use both. So you end up doing a little bit, let's merge both of the lines or whatever, and then modify it by hand. It's not always a perfect system, and merge conflicts can be the bane of one's existence when working in Git, especially for those who are brand new to this.
Yeah, we should say, like, I don't know if this is obvious or not to people that are new to Git, but Git literally tracks every single character that has changed inside of your files, not just what files change. And if you, like, let's say you crack open a 30-line CSS file, and right in the middle of that CSS file, you add a new selector with some new properties and values. Git is smart enough to know, oh, you added this. Let me just slip that in. If you were to merge it, it says, oh, yeah, you're just going to slip this in. However, if you had, like, let's go back to the example I was just talking about with branches, where I'm working on a feature, I changed the background of the homepage to red. And then while I was doing that, somebody else or even myself went to the master branch or the main branch and changed the background to be blue. Mm-hmm. And then I tried to merge that branch into my main branch. Then it's going to say, okay, there's two changes here. You want red. It's currently blue, but it was green initially. What do you want? Like, do you want to keep
make
the
up
existing
your mind.
One? Or do you want to keep it? And if that's the case, then you have to manually jump in there or open up those diff files in your text editor, and you have to select which ones you want. Or in my case, usually just open it up in VS Code and you just delete the parts that you don't want and you keep the parts you do want. And then you commit it again saying, I fixed the merge conflict, and then that will then go away.
Yeah, definitely a very common flow, things that you hit. Okay, so next we have is git fetch. Now, when might you use git fetch? Well, git fetch is usually used to, it just gets all everything, right? That's what it does.
Git fetch is kind of like git pull, except when you do a git pull, you're pulling the changes into whatever you're currently working on, whatever branch or whatever you're working on. With a git fetch, it will stage. It will pull all of the things from that origin, but it won't switch your branch. It won't make any changes. It'll just, it sort of puts them in a staging area. So if you want them, you can go get them.
A good use case for this might be, let's say you have a coworker who's working on a specific branch. They might push that branch to origin, and then maybe you want to modify that branch yourself with them. You could then git fetch. Then you would then have access to that branch on your then local. So then at that point, you could then git check out that branch name and have access to that code and push to that origin. And then from there, you'll have access to that branch itself. So that is git fetch. It's not something I use a ton. I do use it occasionally, but I think the larger your team gets, the more likely you might have to use this.
Yeah, it's almost like you can also use it to just cherry pick things that you want. So maybe sometimes what happens is you're working on a feature and you run into a bug. So somebody else will go and fix that feature and then they say, okay, can you test this with whatever it is you're working on? So now you're in a weird spot where your main or master branch is not up to date. It has the bug. The code you're working on your branch has the bug. And you don't want to merge. Your coworker doesn't want to merge it until you test it. So if that was the case, then you'd go ahead and fetch their branch and either merge it into what you're working on or make another branch where you're just playing around with it. And then you run it and test it. And sometimes if that's the case, you can just merge one or two of those files that are needed, or you can merge the entire thing. But I think that's a pretty advanced use case.
Totally. Next is going to be git stash, which is basically commonly used when people, it's funny, I have not used git stash in a very long time because it's the kind of thing that I felt like I used a lot more when I was first learning Git, and you were just like you made some modifications to some code and then you wanted to pull in some other code. And it's like, wait a second. You have files that have been modified, but they have not been added and they've not been committed. What do you want us to do with these files? Because if you pull this in or whatever, there's a chance that these files are going to be deleted or you're going to lose your changes. What do you want to do with them? And sometimes you just want to say, I don't really care about these changes I made. Maybe these changes I made were superfluous. Maybe they're just like not necessary. So I could do git stash, and git stash does exactly like what it sounds like. And it pulls up the corner of the rug, grabs your little dust bucket, sweep, 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 sweeps it right under that rug.
I like to think of it more of as putting it on the shelf.
Elf on the shelf.
For a quick second. And then if you want, so what I use this a lot for is sometimes you clone a repo. Somebody says, can you take a look at this? Okay, you fork or clone the repo onto your thing. You open it up and you start working on it. And they go, I just added some more code. I just pushed it up. And you go, okay, so now I need to pull their most recent version down. But you can't pull when you have what I refer to as dirty changes, which is code that has changed on your computer but has not yet been added or committed in any way. So if that's the case, then you git stash, and that will take all of your changes that you did and bring it right back to the where you had it before you typed a single character. Then you can do a git pull and get their latest changes. And then you do git stash apply, and then that will take it back off the shelf and try to put it back on top of whatever you were doing. And in some cases, that makes a merge conflict, but in many cases, it just is great. So you sort of just like rewind a second, bring it up to date, and then go, okay, good. Now let's bring in those changes that I was just working on.
Yeah, that's it. I have not used it in that way, but that makes a lot of sense.
All right, last one we have here is git fork. This is actually not part of Git. So if you just type git fork, it won't do anything. But the whole idea is that with GitHub, somebody has like a repo. Like, for example, I submitted a change to Gatsby the other day, so that it would fix something that was breaking something on Windows. So what I had to do is I needed my own copy of Gatsby. And if I wanted to work on it, I could certainly just git clone it. But then if I wanted to push my changes back up to GitHub, I'm not part of the Gatsby team. I'm not allowed to just to push changes to Gatsby. So I need my own version of that Git repo. So that's called WestBoss/Gatsby. So then I made all my changes. I get out of them, I get committed them, I get pushed them. But when I get pushed them, they go up to my own Gatsby repo. And then I guess the last thing we have here is that I can now take my fork. And the difference between a fork and a branch is that a fork is an entire repository that can have many branches, whereas a branch is just one branch. And from a fork, you can make a pull request onto the main, in my case, it was the main Gatsby repo, saying, okay, here are my changes in my repo. Here is your repo. I'm suggesting that we take my master branch and apply these changes onto your master branch, or you can obviously change what the branches are.
Cool. That's I think that's an important piece to cover here. You'll often hear people talking about forking. Another thing you're also going to hear people talking about is pull requests. This is not an ad transition, even though it sounded like it was. and so we have two different types of ways of getting code from one branch into another branch, or even one fork into another fork. And that is going to be the merge or pull request. Now, a merge is what happens when you run the git merge command on two different branches of code, and it tries to merge them. What git pull request does, git pull request, there's no command git pull request. What pull request does is it basically allows you to request code to be added. And is this the same? Do they use pull request in GitLab as well? Is this like universal? Because
I'm assuming, yes. I haven't used GitLab in a while, but when I did, it was the same process.
So basically what it's doing is it's creating an issue in the repository that says, hey, I have some code here and I would like it to be added. And whatever your Git client is, whether it's GitHub, Bitbucket, whatever, they give you tools to be able to look at the code, see what the files have changed, maybe do a little review. GitHub has some really neat stuff where you can do line by line code review and someone can look at it and say, I like this, but I hate this. Now change this, because this is no good. You could do all this and then request for changes to be made. People can make those changes. They can submit it again to be pulled. And then with the click of a button, you can say, yes, please merge this code into this particular branch. So a pull request is a bit more formalized version, a bit more of a way to have proper authorization and proper eyes on the code before it is brought into the actual code base. You'll often see pull requests as being the primary way in which people merge code in large or team-based code bases. We use the words Git and GitHub. And oftentimes, I think beginners may conflate those as being the exact same thing, right? Git is just the interface for working with GitHub. And no, GitHub is a service online for your code to live. It can do a lot of fancy stuff, of which we don't have the time to get into too much here, but there are lots of other ones of these, such as GitLab and Bitbucket are the two biggest ones. GitLab is an open source project. Bitbucket is from Atlassian. I never say their name correctly. And so there's alternatives here, and they function very similarly to GitHub, and they have very similar features. So if you aren't down with GitHub and their Microsoft ownership or whatever, feel free to use any of these other ones. I have used all three. Personally, I don't dig them. The only reason I dropped Bitbucket in general is because they don't have labels for their issues. What's up with that?
Oh, man. Yeah, I use GitLab for almost everything that I do, just because my stuff
GitLab is, or GitHub?
Sorry, GitHub for everything I do, just because like that's where all the community is and that's where most open source is. However, I believe GitLab allows you to have on-site.
Yes, they do.
Because that's huge for a lot of these companies don't want to push their entire business and all of the code behind it onto a server owned by Microsoft. They want to own all of their code in-house. So if that's the case, they have to host their own version of the GitHub type thing in-house on their own.
And it's relatively easy. In fact, I think, I'm not positive about this, I'm pretty sure DigitalOcean has like a one-click install there. So definitely something you can do.
GitHub does it too. It's called GitHub Enterprises. Often you'll hear the big bucks talking about as on-prem, which means on-premises. That's like, just like, I want to use GitHub, but I want to use it on my own servers. I got racks of servers that we can run
on. Racks of servers and racks of cash. let's go ahead and get that enterprise going. Let's talk about common issues really quick, stuff that people hit. We talked about merge conflicts already. They can be confusing. Sometimes a GUI is a nice thing to step in there and help you understand what's changed exactly. Again, we talked about a little bit about the VS Code interface for that. Not great. Not always the easiest to parse exactly what changed. Another one is going to be files tracked unintentionally. And this goes all the way back to the beginning of the episode where we talked about using a git ignore file. Too often, you create a repo, you do git init, whatever, and you're all just like jazzed on creating the project. And next thing you know, you got DS stores and who knows what in your repo. And unfortunately, those are hard to get rid of. once you track them, they're not great to get rid of. So Wes, next comes the next question is, how do I delete this particular file from GitHub?
Yeah,
I have to Google it every time.
For like 5 years.
Yeah.
I have a little alias in my ZSH file called GRI, which means git remove ignored. Just because sometimes I'll commit and then go, oh, it didn't get into my git ignore. And that can also be a security issue if you accidentally, because even if you delete it from your Git repo, it's still in your history. And anyone that has access to that can see it, especially like let's say 3 years ago, you accidentally committed a password to your environmental variable. And then 3 years later, you hire a contractor and give them access to your Git repo. Well, that contractor can go back into your Git history and see that type of thing. So you need to be very sure. And how do you do that? It's you use git rm-r. And I have a little thing, GRI. It does git ls files dash dash ignore dash dash exclude standards pipe xargs. Mm. It's this massive thing. I'll paste it in. It doesn't work all the time, but in a lot of cases, I just have to run GRI and it will remove the files from the repo and all history without removing them from your local file system.
That sounds great. Another question people often ask is about like maybe along the lines of WordPress or Drupal, or like, or you have these CMS based sites where people are, they're used to working in a different flow. They get into Git and they say, well, wait a second. There's so much information in my database. How the heck do I get that into my Git repo? You don't. That is not the place for Git. Unless of course there are certain solutions baked into WordPress or Drupal. I know Drupal has one called, I believe it's called Features, where you can basically take all of your database stuff and throw them into written code modules, of which then you can commit, push up, and then pull down in your production version of your site and have that just work. So you don't store a database in Git. You probably could try it. I don't think it's a good idea in any regard. So I would never do that. So those are common questions that people often hit when they're first running into this stuff, because you want to make sure that your database data is always the freshest. That's why you have to find some better way to track it or export it or whatever. And this is an ad transition into FreshBooks. I'm talking about FreshBooks cloud accounting software. Wes, do you want to talk more about FreshBooks cloud accounting software?
Yes, FreshBooks is the small business accounting software that makes billing painless. It's funny, actually. I have a call with my accountant next week because taxes in Canada got pushed. Mm. Yeah, they got pushed because of coronavirus. And so I've put off making my payments because I owe a bunch of taxes. I'd rather it sit in my account and collect interest than there. So I have a call next week with my accountant, and I don't know, in February or January, I already gave them all of my invoices, all of my revenue, all of my expenses, all of my different taxes, all of the different currencies that I build in. Because that's like another thing is I have to say, okay, I made this much in US, I made this much in Canadian, I made this much in pounds. And then he has to report those as income to the government in Canadian dollars using some posted rates and whatnot. So it's just, there's a lot going on running a business. It's very complicated. And like the one thing you don't want is to be in trouble with your taxes. So having nice clean books is key. So check out freshbooks.com/syntax and make sure you use syntax in the how did you hear about a section. for the next time that you need to send a invoice or track your time or any expense that you have.
So maybe you need to track one of these expenses to buy Git Client, because a lot of these you have to buy because they're nice software. Now, Git Client or Git UI is going to be a software that could help you with all of these things, whether it is seeing your project better in terms of what's committed and not, or just simply giving you really neat little graphics into the path and branches and all those things that happen within your code, the history of it. Now, there is a massive amount of Git clients. I've included a link from Git's own website sharing some of these. And some of them are prettier than others. Some of them are intentionally not like pretty. But if I'm going to go away from the command line and get into a client, I want a pretty app. And for me, I think the prettiest one is going to be the Git Kraken. Although I see you have under Git clients, you also have CLI. So you're thinking that a Git client is also a CLI. I'm pretty sure you're accurate on that. I'm not.
Yeah, any client is something that adds additional ease of use or features on top of what the Git command line already has. So there was a popular one called Hub for the longest time, but Git probably about a year ago released their own CLI. It's called GH or GitHub, and you can brew install, or I don't know, Windows. You can buy like a CD-ROM or something like that for Windows.
Oh.
and install it. And it allows you to do the stuff that's not part of Git, like pull requests and issues and repos and all that stuff. It allows you to do all of that via your command line. I've actually installed it and never used it because I just use the website. But like some of this stuff is old habits die hard, and I should probably be checking it out.
Same with me. In fact, as we're doing this episode, and not as we're like right now, I just downloaded Git Kraken because, hey, whoa. Did you ever realize that name, like, let's Git Kraken?
Oh, I didn't realize that at
all. Yeah, because it's spelled Kraken with a K, just wow. Like the Seattle hockey team, which I'm wearing their hat of currently. Currently wearing a Seattle Kraken hat.
Wow. Man,
this is a lot of layers deep here. So I'm going to give Kraken a try because it is the prettiest of the bunch. And there's a whole bunch of these, man. These things go all out.
GitHub Desktop is super good. I used that for a while. And we also used that when we were teaching, because it's super easy for beginners to just visualize what's going on. There's a sync button, if I could remember. Because like pull and push and all that is kind of hard, but if you just press a sync button, it'll ask you for a commit message and it'll zip them up to the internet.
Yeah,
check that one out as well.
These are all cool. I'm gonna try to give some of these a try. And if you type in Git into VS Code's extensions, there's just about a gazillion of them. So there is a lot of options out there for people who are visual workers. I personally would say, hey, if you are the type of person who really likes a good GUI, still try the command line, because the command line is where it's at for this stuff. I really think that you'll want to spend the time to learn the command line stuff.
Oh, the one command I forgot is git status. That if you want to like know where am I at any given time, git status. That will tell you like what's changed and whatnot.
I always just use the GUI in VS Code for that personally.
Oh, because it'll tell you what has changed and whatnot. Yeah.
Cool. But I think that's a good one, because that is in crucial to understanding what exactly has happened here. Cool. So that is it for Git. Do you have any additional anything, or should we hop into sick picks?
Let's hop into some sick picks.
Cool. Sick picks. Well, sick picks are the section of this show where we get to talk about things that we find to be sick. Do you have any sick picks that you are just dying to talk about?
I do. And I sick picked this. This is another one of my sick follow-ups. I don't know, maybe like 2 years ago, I sick picked my Yeti Rambler or whatever it's called. It's like a coffee mug with a nice handle made by Yeti. And whenever anyone buys anything Yeti, people always roll their eyes because it's super expensive and it seems unnecessary given that the alternatives are often a third of the price.
The culture is kind of bro-y too. That might be a turnoff.
Yeah. There's quite a bit. There's this, the Instagram called, I won't say it because there's kids listening, but SHITI. And it's like you have this like badge that you can get for your crappy Coleman cooler and slap it on and it looks like a fake Yeti. Anyways,
oh, that's fun.
their cups are like double wall stainless, and they keep your drink hot for absolutely ever. And that's not like you can go to Target and there's 100 of these things. Like sucking air out of two stainless steel things is not new. But I was just looking at our entire cupboard of these cups, and every single one, the Ozark Trail ones, the ones that I got at a conference, the whatever, like the knockoff ones that you get, all of them are peeling and faded, and the paint on them just doesn't hold up at all. And I put them all in the dishwasher because like I don't have time to hand wash it. And the Yeti one is the only one that looks almost brand new, aside for a couple scrapes that I've had just from dropping it and whatnot. So I'm going to go out on a limb, and the coolers might not be worth your money versus the knockoffs, but the drinkware absolutely is.
That's pretty sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. My sick pick is going to be a podcast. I love me some podcasts. I'm a big, big fan. This is a podcast for music fans. And I'm going to have a lot of podcast picks here. So if you're not a music fan, don't worry, I'll get you next week. So this podcast is, I've been discovering a lot. It's called What Had Happened Was, and it is featuring the legendary Prince Paul along with Open Mike Eagle. And if you're into music of any kind, this is a really, really fascinating podcast because if you've never heard of Prince Paul, he's a famous rap producer, but he's been around for a long time and been a part of some very, very, very influential projects. And even as like crossed over, not necessarily crossed over, but he like really, or he really took that like the sample based music to a place that it hasn't been. He's extremely influential from all of the De La Soul albums. He won some Grammys doing the Chris Rock albums. And he's done so many great things. Handsome Boy Modeling School was like a really huge project with a bunch of mainstream rock artists and a whole bunch of cool stuff. But this podcast is called What Had Happened Was, and it's each one is like sort of an hour or so on different moments in music history of some of the biggest, most influential albums that existed. And Prince Paul is just like the most humble, down to earth guy. The personalities really make this podcast because he can talk about these events and he just seems so grounded and normal and humble and whatever. And to the point where it's like, it's absolutely fascinating to hear somebody who is like originated so many different things. Just be like, well, yeah, that was just sort of my style. So I was just doing it like this and do it like this. And these we did this and we just went and tried this. It was just, it's very fascinating. A look into the music industry. He has a lot of thoughts on. So I had what had happened was my new favorite podcast, and it's like a limited one kind of thing. So I think there's only going to be 10 episodes. So shameless plugs, what do you got for me?
I'm going to shamelessly plug either my current or upcoming course. MasterGatsby.com is going to be my next course, which is learning React, Gatsby. We do all the CSS in it, which a lot of people have been asking for a while. Serverless functions, lots of custom React hooks, things like that. It's a really fun one. I'm really excited about it and pretty proud. So check it out, MasterGatsby.com.
Cool. I'm going to shamelessly plug my latest course, which is going to be React 101. Essentially, it's going to be React for everybody, but it's going to be brand new from the ground up for 2020 and beyond. For as far out beyond as possible, we're going to be doing a hooks first approach. We're going to be teaching React to brand new people. So if you are interested in learning React from me, this will be like my fifth time doing a React basics course. So I'm very excited. I have a lot of material and a lot to say about the basics of React. Head on over to leveluptutorials.com/pro. Sign up for the year and save 25%.
Beautiful. I still appreciate you not calling it React for Beginners.
Yes, that is the story of how Wes and I met. React for everybody. That's my brand. Now when anybody stomps on the everybody brand, I'm going to be like grumble about it.
Awesome. All right. I think that's it. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we will catch you on Monday.
Peace. Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.